It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to an hour of science fiction. Later on, we'll hear the story, The Man Who Went Back to Save Lincoln, on Suspense. But right now, it's X-1, penned by frequent contributor Robert Sheckley, who went under the pen name Finn O'Donovan for this episode and two others from February 13, 1957, on NBC. It's the story, The Trap.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds.
X minus one.
Tonight, The Trap, by Finn O'Donovan.
Samish, I am in need of some assistance. The situation is potentially dangerous, so come at once. It shows how right you were, Samish, old friend. I never should have trusted a Terran. What a sorry mess, Samish, and the plot seems so foolproof.
Hey, Thurston. Thurston, get up. Get up, come on.
Why? What's the matter? Why?
Come on, it's daybreak.
Now, there's good news. Let me alone.
Oh, come on. You don't want to sleep through our vacation. The bird's on the wing.
It's 5 o'clock in the morning.
5 o'clock in the morning in the Adirondacks is the middle of the day.
What's the weather out?
Oh, it's raining.
For crying out loud.
Oh, don't go back to sleep.
It always rains on the first day of vacation. Rule of nature.
Look, I got a little fly rod with a new plastic reel that I'm just dying
to try.
You
know what the trouble with you is, Ed? You're in love with sporting goods equipment.
Oh, now, wait till you see this rod.
And take that rifle I sold you. You could shoot a rhinoceros with it, but you won't, because, Ed, you're essentially a friendly man.
The trouble with you is you don't like the woods.
Well, how can you say that? Don't I come with you on a hunting trip every year?
Sure, but you always manage to steer us over to Lake Placid to the cocktail lounges.
Ah, now, there's real hunting. Now, there are trophies to bring back to the city. None of your paltry brown bears or black bears.
Oh, come on. Now, Thurston, I came up here to the mountains to hunt.
Have a drink.
Well, it's awfully early in the morning.
Well, look upon it as an extension of last night.
Well, all right. Oh. Think it'll stop raining?
No, who cares?
Well, come on now, get dressed. It's a perfect day out there in the woods for bear.
It certainly is. That's why I want to stay right here in the cabin. Ed.
What?
Pass the canteen?
It's empty.
Well, open up one of the bottles and pour it in.
Well, why don't you take it straight from the bottle?
What, on a camping trip? Pour it into the canteen.
Okay.
Hey. Now, this is what I call a hunting trip.
Well, you haven't been outside the cabin. Oh, come on, Thurston. Can't we go out just to hunt something, even if it's just a little rabbit? Look. Stop raining.
Now, close the door. Now, you let some of the fumes out. Did you fill that canteen yet?
Hey, look at this.
What?
Right by the door.
How many times have I told you not to leave your collapsible cook stove where I can step on it in the night?
It isn't.
What is it?
I don't know. It's made out of metal. It's just sitting here in the doorway. It says, trap on the top.
What?
Trap.
Where'd you buy that?
I didn't.
Well, I certainly didn't.
Hey, there's a tag on it. Dear friend, this is a new and revolutionary design in a trap. To introduce the trap to the general public, we are giving you this model absolutely free. You will find it a unique and valuable device for the capture of small game, provided you follow precisely the directions on the other side. Good luck and good hunting. Well, now, what do you think of that?
Pass me the can, see.
If this isn't the strangest thing, do you suppose it was left during the night?
Who cares?
Well, aren't you interested?
Not particularly. It's just another gadget. I've got 100 like it. My bear trap from Abercrombie and Fitch, the jaguar horn from Battlers, the crocodile lure.
Well, I've never seen a trap like this. Yeah, it's pretty clever advertising to just leave it here.
I'll bill you for it eventually. You care for the canteen?
Oh, thanks. Hey, look at this thing, Thurston.
Do I have to?
Well, there are instructions on the other side. Quote, take the trap to a clearing and anchor it to any convenient tree with the attached chain. Mm-hmm. Here's the chain, all right. Press button one on the base. This primes the trap. Wait 5 seconds and press button two. This activates the trap. Nothing more is required until a capture has been effected. Then press button three to deactivate and open the trap and remove the prey. Warning, keep the trap closed at all times except when removing the prey.
That's goofy.
No opening is required for the prey's ingress since the trap works on the principle of osmotic suction and inducts the prey directly into the trap.
Well, somebody's been at that canteen before.
No, that's what it says. What won't they think of next? Osmotic suction.
Pass the canteen back.
I'm going to set it.
What, the canteen?
No, the trap. Come on, help me.
Ah, now that's the trouble with you, Ed. You're always cluttering up a hunting trip with hunting.
Come on, take this in.
All right. If it makes you any happier. Hey, boy, it's cold.
Come on, we'll carry it over to that tree.
It's heavy.
Yeah. Here, let's put it down here.
You think we really ought to fool with it?
Of course. Maybe we can catch a fox.
What will we do with a fox?
Turn it loose. The fun is in the catching. Here, take the end of the chain.
Hey, look out. You got your foot in it.
Yeah, I guess it snaps in here. Oh, there it is.
Let's get back to the cabin. The great outdoors depresses me.
Wait a minute. I've got to press button one.
Hey, it's glowing.
Yeah. 4, 5. Now button two.
Well,
I guess we just leave it.
Well, come on back to the cabin.
All right. It is time for breakfast.
It certainly is. Pass it to me and don't spill it.
Samish, where are you? You are my oldest friend. I have already beamed you the beginning of my story. The Terrans accepted my trap as a trap, nothing more. And they began using it at once with no thought as to the consequences. I had counted on this. The fantastic curiosity of the species is well known. During this period, my wife was crawling giddily around the planetoid, redecorating our hutch and enjoying the change from city life. Everything was going well.
And
what?
It's your turn.
Okay, here we go. Ready on the right.
Ready on the left.
The flag is up.
The flag is waving.
Target's up.
You missed.
Oh, Thurston, couldn't we just pull the cork out instead of trying to shoot off the neck?
Why, certainly not. This is a hunting trip. You can pull a cork off in the city.
I have often corked off in the city.
Ed, why don't you shut your trap?
Trap? Why don't... Thurston, the trap.
What about it?
Maybe we caught something. Come on.
Where are you going?
The trap. There. Look. We got something. We've caught something.
Hey.
Come on, look inside.
What is it, huh?
It's a rabbit.
You sure?
Well, look at it.
That is not exactly a rabbit, Ed.
It's the size of a rabbit.
But it's bright green. Ed, no more rum before breakfast.
No, siree.
Starting tomorrow, hand me the canteen.
What do you think it is?
Could be a rabbit.
Green? With lobster claws? And eyes on stalks?
Well, then again, it might not be a rabbit.
I think it's a new species. We'll have to build a cage and then find out what it eats.
As long as it doesn't drink. You don't suppose it drinks, does it?
No, it doesn't look like a drinking type.
Now, Ed, I'm not going to share my vacation with a green rabbit with lobster claws. Probably has dirty habits. There's something very unnatural about that trap. It's inhuman.
I'll bet they said that about Ford's electric light and Edison's car and the telephone invented by Alexander's ragtime band.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, sure. I saw the movie. Come on. We'll build a cage, and then we'll set the trap again.
Okay, but we better go back to the cabin.
What for?
We better refill that canteen.
Why haven't you come yet? Samish, don't you appreciate the seriousness of my situation? Think of your old friend. Think of the lustrous-skinned Fregel for whose sake I got into this mess. Communicate with me, at least. The Terrans used a trap, which, of course, was not a trap at all, but a matter transmitter. I had the other end concealed on the planetoid and fed into it three small animals which I found in the garden. The Terrans removed them from the transmitter each time. For what purpose, I couldn't guess, but a Terran will keep anything. After the third beast passed through and had not been returned, I knew that was all, and that everything was in readiness, so I prepared for the fourth and final sending, the all-important one, for which all else was mere preparation.
Ouch. Well, that finishes the cage.
You know what?
No. What?
Those things smell. All three of them.
Oh, I think they're very handsome. Well, here they are. One, two, and three. First, our green rabbit. Next, our bird with three sets of scaly wings. And this other thing, what does it look like?
Well, it looks like a snake. Except it has a head at each end. They eat anything yet?
No, I've tried milk, mincemeat, vegetables, caviar, potato chips. They haven't touched a thing.
Maybe they're sick. Hey, what are you keeping them for?
Well, they might come in handy someday.
Oh, yeah? What for?
Thurston, have you ever desired fame?
What?
Fame. The knowledge that your name will go down through the ages.
I am a businessman. I've never considered the possibility.
Never?
What do you have in mind?
These creatures are unique.
And they smell.
We'll present them to a museum. The Daily Thurston exhibit of creatures hitherto unknown.
They might name them after us. Our names will go down with Livingston, Audubon, Teddy Roosevelt, Walt Disney.
I was thinking of a wing on the Museum of Natural History that would go right across Central Park West. The Daily Thurston Wing.
Thurston Daily.
That's not alphabetical.
That's true. But, Ed, we only got three of them. We can't equip a wing with three exhibits.
Well, there must be more where these came from. Let's examine the trap.
Just a minute.
The canteen?
The canteen.
We've got something. There it is. Look, it's about 3 feet tall. A big one.
Uh-huh. A small green head and a forked tail.
Oh, look at him, waving something on top of his head.
Well, the rest were quiet. Maybe this one's dangerous, huh?
We'll handle it with nuts.
Nuts?
Well, nets.
Oh, nuts.
All right.
And then we'll have to get in touch with the museum. Thurston, take a telegram.
All righty.
Museum of Natural History. Dear sir.
Or madam.
Have discovered at least 4 animals, which I suspect to be new species stop. Have you room for suitable exhibit stop? Signed, your friend Ed.
Wasn't that signature pretty informal?
You're right. Make it, your good friend Ed.
We better go back and build a cage for this latest one. It looks awfully exciting.
I think we'll make this one strong. Oh, this last specimen is the cream of our collection. Look at it. Its head is turning pink.
It looks mad, doesn't it?
Well, you'd be mad, too, if you were trapped by osmotic suction.
Say that again.
Osmotic suction.
Here, you take the canned scene. I'm way ahead of you.
What, Samish? The rest of the story? Well, it's obvious enough. After 3 animals had passed through the transmitter, I knew I was ready. Now was the time to tell my wife. Accordingly, I asked her to crawl into the garden with me. Tell me, dear, she said, has something been bothering you of late? Have I displeased you? My dear, I said, you have tried your best, but it just isn't good enough. I'm going to take a new mate. She stood motionless, her cilia swaying in confusion. Then she exclaimed, Fregel! Yes, I told her, the glorious Fregel has consented to share my hutch. And with a clever shove, I pushed her into the matter transmitter. Samish, you should have seen her expression. Her cilia wreathed, and she screamed and was gone. I was free, free at last. Free to mate with the splendid Fregel. Now you can appreciate the full perfection of the scheme. It was necessary to secure the Terran's cooperation, since a matter transmitter must be manipulated at both ends. I had disguised it as a trap, because Terrans will believe anything. And, as a master stroke, I sent them my wife. Let them try to live with her. I never could. Foolproof. Absolutely foolproof. No one could prove a thing. And then, Samish, then it happened.
Did you get the cage finished?
Yeah, our 4th animal is snug as a bug in a...
It doesn't matter.
Boy, it's a mad one, though. I couldn't help feeling it was trying to tell me something.
Come on. Here's a trap.
It's empty.
But it is. It's empty.
You suppose something's wrong with it?
Well, maybe there's nothing else to capture.
Oh, that's silly. Why would it capture 4 animals and then stop? I've pressed all the buttons in the right way.
Maybe the battery's down.
Osmotic suction doesn't work on batteries.
How do you know?
Did you ever hear of osmotic suction working on batteries?
No.
You see? There you are.
Well, you got something there. Oh, I know.
What?
Let's go to Lake Placid and forget the whole thing.
No, this thing's got to work. It's got to. The Thurston Daily wing of the American Museum of Natural History is at stake. Would you want that vast edifice across Central Park West to remain empty?
No.
Would you want the Daily Thurston wing to be rented for a garage?
Or a roller skating rink? Oh, horrors, no.
It's got to work again. I'm going to open the top.
Look out.
No, let's just see what's inside here. My hand. It's gone. My hand.
No, it isn't. It's right there on the end of your arm.
Oh, but when I put it in the trap, my hand disappeared.
You know what would do you a lot of good? A little rest in Lake Placid. I know a fine, restful cocktail lounge.
No. Look, I'll try it again with both arms. Ah, look. No hands.
Very clever.
I see how it works, Thurston. Those animals didn't come from the Adirondacks at all.
You mean they're imposters?
They came from wherever my hand is.
Where's your hand?
I don't know. Do you realize there's a lot more where they come from? Thurston, the future of the Daily Thurston Wing is assured. Give me a hand up.
Ed, what are you going to do?
I'm climbing into the trap.
Don't do it, Ed. You don't know what's in there.
Here I go. There goes my feet.
Wait a minute. Here's a canteen. Let's have one for the road.
All right. Wish me luck.
I still don't think you should do it.
I do it for science and the Daily Thurston Wing.
Why do you hold your nose?
I got sinus. Here I go.
Samish, if you don't come immediately, it'll be too late. I must stop beaming you. The enormous Terran has completely ransacked my little planetoid. He has shoved everything, living or dead, through the transmitter. My home is in ruins, and now he's tearing down my hutch. Samish, this monster means to capture me as a specimen. There's no time to lose. Samish, what can be keeping you? You, my oldest friend, you who... What's that? Samish, what are you saying? You can't mean it. No, not you and Friegel. Reconsider, my old friend. Remember our friendship. Remember...
Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Trap, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Finn O'Donovan and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in our cast were Donald Buca as The Voice, Ralph Bell as Thurston, and William Redfield as Ed. This is Fred Collins. What does the code of conduct mean to the American military man? On Christmas Eve, 1944, General Anthony McAuliffe sent this message to his men fighting at Bastogne. What's merry about all this, you ask? We're fighting. It's cold. We aren't home. All true. But what has the proud Eagle Division accomplished with its worthy comrades? Just this. We have stopped cold everything that has been thrown at us. How effectively this was done will be written in history. We continue to hold Bastogne. By holding Bastogne, we assure the success of the Allied armies. We are giving our country and our loved ones at home a worthy Christmas present. And by being privileged to take part in this gallant feat of arms, we are truly making for ourselves a Merry Christmas. That's what the code meant to General Anthony McAuliffe, the will to fight on. That's what it means to every American military man. Join us again next week for a new adventure in Dimension and Space on X-1. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from February 13, 1957 on NBC. You are listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. And now a story repurposed from the Mysterious Traveler series about 12 years earlier on Suspense from February 11, 1962. It's the Robert A. Arthur tale, The Man Who Went Back to Save Lincoln, with Ralph Bell, Court Benson, and Jim Bowles on CBS.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Tomorrow is Abraham Lincoln's birthday. 97 years ago, Lincoln, one of our greatest presidents, died, slain by the bullet of the actor John Wilkes Booth. Many historians feel that if Lincoln had lived, our history and world history would have been profoundly changed for the better. With this in mind, we bring you now a strange and unusual drama, The Man Who Went Back to Save Lincoln. This first portion of Suspense is brought to you by Alpine Cigarettes. In a moment, Act One of The Man Who Went Back to Save Lincoln, starring Court Benson as Tom and Ian Martin as the professor, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur.
All right, now, Tom, give me the readings on that gauge, please. It's calibrated in years.
In years? Right. It says 1914 now, 1913, 1912, 1911, 1910, 1910. It stopped moving.
Well, your accumulated tension is too great to overcome, but I'll try greater power. That's what I was afraid of. Field coil blew out. But at least I added a couple of years. The projective force went all the way back to 1910. That's 52 years.
Professor Hodges, what do you intend to call this invention?
Oh, well, I could call it, an electronic compressor for transmitting personality patterns across temporal gaps.
Time machine would be simpler.
Yes, but it wouldn't be accurate. In one sense, a time machine is a total impossibility, believe me. But in another sense, everyone travels in time constantly.
I'm not sure I'm following you, Professor Hodges.
All right, what happened on your 10th birthday?
Well, I had a big party. I got a pony for a present, and I rode him all over the lawn. I can still feel the licking I got for ruining the lawn.
Now, you see, you just traveled back 28 years in time. Mentally, of course.
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
Exactly. Now, suppose I connected this apparatus to you. Suppose I then focused it on some special date in history and at some special point where I knew people were present. Are you following me?
Yes, I think so, sir.
Now, the electronic circuits would take your memory pattern, your personality, amplify it millions of times, and push it back into the past. Into the mind of some person at that particular spot at that particular time.
I see.
He'll be able to think with his mind, see with his eyes, hear with his ears, and move about with his body.
Put it that way, it doesn't sound quite so impossible.
Oh, it's very much possible. Of course, there are difficulties.
I imagine there must be a lot of them.
Oh, the technical difficulties can be overcome, but... Well, now, for instance, suppose your mind finds itself inside the mind of a very strong-willed individual who fights you.
Ah, yes, I see the problem. He might dominate you, make you helpless.
Yes, it's all very uncertain.
Well, uncertainty is one of the natural principles of existence, Professor.
Oh. Then, would you be willing to take the risk, Tom?
Risk? You mean of a trip into the past?
That's just what I mean. Now, look, Tom, you're only 38, but you're already one of the world's foremost authorities on Abraham Lincoln.
Thank you, sir. I think I'm pretty well grounded on the subject anyway.
I've read your books and I've followed your career ever since you were one of my students. I know that you believe Abraham Lincoln's death at the hands of John Wilkes Booth in 1865 was one of the great tragic turning points in history.
No, it was. If Lincoln had lived, Professor, why, this would be a different world. He would have healed the wounds of the Civil War and left us a great nation decades sooner. We would have been a world power by 1900. We would have had the strength to prevent both world wars. We'd be living in a world so much better that... I'm letting myself get carried away again, speculating about suppose Lincoln had lived.
All right, son. Suppose he had lived.
I know, but he didn't.
Tom, today is February 11th, 1962. Tomorrow is the anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's birth. Now, almost 97 years ago, on April 15th, 1865, Lincoln was assassinated. How would you like to go back across those 97 long years and save Abraham Lincoln's life? Well, are you comfortable, Tom? The electrodes I've attached to your head don't hurt.
Oh, I'm fine, Professor. A little excited, that's all. Even though this is just an experimental jaunt.
Oh, back to the year 1912. 50 years, a half a century. Now you see the old public library across the street. Boarded up, deserted. Dead?
Yes, I used to take books out of there when I was a boy.
And so did your father.
Yes, he met my mother there. She was a young librarian, and he went in for a book. Well, it's family history. He was so bowled over at meeting her, he forgot the book and left it behind.
And he also forgot to sign his name on the library card in the back of the book. Look, Tom, I have it here. Henderson's Life of Lincoln.
The same book. And it looks as if no one's taken it out in the last 40 years.
No one has. Here's the card. Here's the line where your father should have signed. Perfectly blank. Tom, you were going back 50 years and sign that card that your father forgot to sign.
I'm going to enter my father's mind 50 years ago?
Exactly. You'll see with his eyes, hear with his ears, and think with his mind. Now remember, you're to change the past. You're to sign that library card.
Right, Professor.
So, concentrate on the time. Noon, April 10th, 1912. Say it aloud to yourself.
Noon, April the 10th, 1912. Noon, April the 10th, 1912.
Noon. Noon. April the 10th, 1912. Sir!
Noon. What is it? Are you ill? Where am I?
Why, this is the public library. And I have the book you requested, The Life of Lincoln. Why are you staring at me so oddly, sir?
It's 12 o'clock. What's the date?
Why, April 10th, 1912.
And today's the first time I ever saw you, isn't it?
Yes.
But you're Mary Andrews from Philadelphia.
Why...
You just started working here today.
Well, yes, but how did you know?
How did I know? Why, I seem to have always known. That's queer. It's as if there were a voice in my mind telling me things.
Are you sure you're all right?
Just a little dizzy. The effect of love at first sight.
Oh, please, sir.
I mean it. Mary, Miss Andrews, will you have lunch with me?
Why, I...
Good, that's settled. It's lunchtime. Get your hat.
Well, all right, I will. But this book, don't you want to take it?
Oh, bother the book. Lincoln can wait. But wait a minute. There's something I'm trying to remember. Something I have to do. That's it. I do have to sign the card.
Oh, not if you don't want to.
Yes, yes, I do. I must. There's something in my mind, something telling me not to fail. I have to hurry. Feeling a little dizzy. My name, Tom Morrison. No, not Tom. What's wrong with me? Henry. Henry Morrison. There. Card's all signed. Now I...
Mr. Morrison, you're so pale. Can I get you a drink of water? Mr. Morrison? Mr. Morrison?
Look, Tom, look. The library card.
Now it's signed. My father's name, Henry Morrison.
Yes, but he started to sign it Tom Morrison. Then he crossed out Tom and wrote Henry. That proves that your personality was dominant, if just for a moment.
I know, but it was all so ephemeral.
But the point is that history was changed. You proved it can be done. And if you can do that, you can go back and save Abraham Lincoln's life. But first, we have more tests ahead of us. Tom, how would you like to go back and hear the Gettysburg Address in person?
Hey, you, take care. You pushed me.
Oh, sorry, I felt dizzy. Where am I? This crowd.
Are you crazy? You're in Gettysburg, and this crowd has come to hear Lincoln speechify, just as I have, all the way from Washington. Now be quiet, he's starting.
7 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we're engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We're met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field that those who here gave their lives that this nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we do this. But in another sense,
Professor, I saw Lincoln, and I heard him deliver the Gettysburg Address. It's strange. His voice was even higher pitched than I'd imagined.
You stayed in the past a full hour. That's tremendous, Tom. Now, whose mind were you in?
Oh, it turned out to be a farmer named Evans, a simple fellow. After the first moment, I was completely in control. I could have done anything I wanted. His mind couldn't have stopped me.
That proves my theory. Now we're ready for the real thing. We'll leave for Washington tomorrow. We'll set up our equipment and instruments in the Ford Theater itself.
The Ford Theater?
Yes. And you are going to return to that fateful night and prevent that murderer's shot from being fired. Well, everything seems to be working. I was afraid the trip by truck might have jarred some of the components.
How still it is here. How hushed. It's as if not a single sound had been uttered here since the night Lincoln was shot.
Yes, past seems alive. Oh, they say that time turns back for no one, that the moving finger writes and having writ moves on. But you and I will alter the writing in the Book of Fate, hmm? We can't fail. We have only this one chance.
I won't fail. Abraham Lincoln is going to live.
Never lose that thought, Tom. Now, let's work out our strategy. We have the place to ourselves until tomorrow morning. I convinced the management I was engaged in some tests that need absolute privacy, so we don't have to hurry.
Good. We have to work out where everybody was. The interior, you know, has been changed around here somewhat since this was last used as a theater.
Well, you're the Lincoln expert. You tell me where, and I'll do the rest.
All right, well, let's see. Yes, over there was the box office. And then, over here was the entrance into the auditorium. All this space was the auditorium. There, of course, the stage. And up there, Professor, is the private box where Lincoln sat. Now, at about 9 o'clock in the evening, President and Mrs. Lincoln entered with two guests. The play had already started. A man named Buckingham took their tickets, and an usher led them up a set of stairs to their box.
Go on, Tom. I'm following the exact movements of everyone are very important.
Well, at about 10 after 10, John Wilkes Booth sauntered in. He spoke to Buckingham, and then he went upstairs toward Lincoln's booth. In his pocket, he carried a brass derringer loaded with one shot.
And he struck almost immediately.
Yes, sir. The president had an armed guard, John F. Parker, but Parker was criminally negligent. He left Lincoln unguarded, which gave Booth his fatal chance. Well, he fired, leapt to the stage, and made his getaway. Lincoln died the next day.
Tom, son, think of it. Tomorrow, if we succeed, the history books will say Lincoln lived. All history for nearly 100 years will be changed. For the better.
We'll succeed. We'll have to.
It'll depend on you, Tom. You'll have to save Lincoln and probably kill Booth. Now, let's get the equipment set up in the right spots. Yeah, everything's working. How do you feel?
Keyed up. Anxious to get started. I can't tell you how excited I am.
If anything goes wrong, it can kill you, Tom.
I'm willing to take the chance, sir.
Also, if anything goes wrong, we won't get a second chance.
I know. So let's recheck now everything that I'm going to do. First, you plan to send me back into the mind of Buckingham, the ticket taker.
Well, he's the logical choice, and I hope we can count on his being a man of no great mental attainments. Success or failure may rest on that.
Yes, of course. It would be fatal if I found myself in the mind of someone strong and determined whom I couldn't control.
If that happens, son, do nothing. Will yourself back to your own time. Change nothing. Under those conditions, we can try again. Once you've changed anything, we can never make another effort.
Yes, I understand.
However, I don't think anything will go wrong. Now, we know exactly where Buckingham stood and can focus the temporal personality transmitter very closely. Now, Tom, you know it'll take a supreme effort.
Yes, I know, sir.
I think you will have to force the ticket taker, Buckingham, to kill John Wilkes Booth.
Very well. I will, if necessary.
Then, just keep telling yourself, save Lincoln. Kill Booth.
Save Lincoln. Kill Booth. I'll think of nothing else.
And here you go. Back to 1865. Good luck.
Save Lincoln. Kill Booth. Save Lincoln. Kill Booth. Save Lincoln.
Steady, man.
Kill.
Steady. Hell, you almost fell then. What are you mumbling to yourself about? Drinking again, is that it?
Where am I?
Why, this is Ford's Theater, of course. If you need the date, it's April 14th. Anno Domini 1865. What's wrong with you, man?
Just dizzy for a moment.
So I'm here, on the scene. Ford's Theater, the night of Abraham Lincoln's assassination. I'm here.
What's that about Lincoln?
Yes, of course he's here tonight. Everybody knows that.
Yes, of course.
The lobby of Ford's Theater. And he hasn't arrived yet. We've done it. And I can't fail. I won't.
Boy. You're in a bad way, mumbling to yourself. Staggering. Now, look, you better go home, lie down, sleep it off.
I'm all right. Yes. Yes, I'm quite all right.
The play's going on, you know. You mustn't disturb the president.
No. The president. Yes. Yes, the president. He mustn't be disturbed. I'll see he isn't disturbed.
You're certainly acting strangely tonight.
Acting? Who are you to be a judge of acting?
No, I mean, it's just a temporary lapse, but my name, am I Buckingham?
Well, that's a good one. Tell him, Harry, is our friend's name Buckingham?
Well, I doubt it, since your name is Buckingham.
That's right. Say, how much did you have to drink?
We missed. Somehow we missed. I'm someone else.
Buckingham, what the deuce is he muttering to himself?
It won't make any difference. I'll find him, kill him.
Look, why don't you go in and sit quietly until you're yourself again? Now, just don't make any noise.
No, I can't sit down. I've got to find someone. But who? Yes, Lincoln. And John Wilkes Booth. Save one, kill the other.
Hey, Buckingham, help me hold him up. He's staggering. All right.
Dizzy, I've got to concentrate. Well, Lincoln, Booth, concentrate.
There's no whiskey on his breath. He's ill. We better get him outside.
Yeah, come along, old fella.
No, I'm all right. It's past 10. I have something important to do. Matter of life and death. Tell me, have you seen Booth, John Wilkes Booth, the actor?
Have we seen Booth?
Yes, I want to find. Come over me. Peculiar dizzy spell, then. Can't let that happen. I have too important a project to carry out.
That's strange. He's recovered.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I have to go in. I have a very important engagement to keep tonight. Yes, very important. A matter of life and death. Good night, gentlemen. This is a night when history will be made.
Well, that was a funny performance. He wasn't drunk, but he certainly seemed to have something on his mind.
He talked like two different men there part of the time.
Yes.
Well, with him, you never know what he's up to. Those actors. A strange bunch. Just imagine him asking us if we'd seen John Wilkes Booth.
Concentrate. Queer, but concentrate. Kill. There's the door.
There you are, Mr. President.
What is it, my good fellow? What do you wish?
To give you this.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Man Who Went Back to Save Lincoln, starring Cort Benson as Tom and Ian Martin as the professor, and written especially for Suspense by Robert Arthur. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber. Featured in tonight's story were Margaret Draper as Mary Andrews, Cliff Carpenter as Buckingham, Ralph Bell as the man. The voice of Abraham Lincoln was created by Jim Bowles. Listen again next week when we return with The Old Boyfriend, written by Peter Fernandez. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Get in the game with Phil Rizzuto's Sports Time every night but Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from February 11th, 1962 on CBS. And so closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.